AgBioScience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
What I've learned with service is like, you can't serve everybody, right? You can't be so idealistic that you're out trying to solve all the world's problems and kind of force this dream you have upon people. But what I've learned, if you find the right people that are vision aligned, that really understand who you are and what you're trying to do, and they see the opportunity in front of you, those are the best people to serve.
Welcome to Ag Bioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinovis CEO, Mitch Fraser.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. The USDA estimates that between 30 and 40% of the U.S. food supply is wasted every year. That's over 133 billion pounds. One farmer turned soldier turned entrepreneur is tackling that market, and he joins us today. Welcome, Ben Moore, founder of The Ugly Company. Ben, it's great to see you.
Hey, Mitch. Thanks very much for having me. This is pretty cool. Connecting California to Indiana right now. I like it.
I love everything about it. And Ben, your story is truly like out of a novel. I mean, I love this. Grew up in California, a kid who grew up around farming. You went to the Army, you spent some time at Notre Dame, you come back, you try to do this farming thing, you say, gosh, I need to go create a trucking company. Like, this is just an amazing like series of events. And then you create this company that ultimately now is The Ugly Company. Your products on the store shelves of Sam's Club and Target. Walk us through this crazy journey that has taken you from California to the Army to back again.
Hey, well, I appreciate that. Hopefully, you didn't oversell, you know, how interesting this story is or not, but that was a heck of an intro. I need to get you to introduce me when I go do things in the future, you know? But yeah, so my story, you know, it started right here in Kingsburg. It's a small town in Central California. All the Midwestern listeners, I think you'll be proud to know that at one point, Kingsburg was actually voted. It was like in the top 10 considered like a best Midwestern cities, you know, which was pretty cool because like we're a farming community, right? So hey, even though I'm from California, I absolutely love the Midwest and we share a lot of similar values. And like you come here, people smile, wave, like open the door for you, that kind of thing. So pretty relatable for people out in the Midwest. But yeah, it all started here in Kingsburg. Half my family was just people from that have been in the United States for a long time. My grandparents' side, I come from Ireland, had roots all the way back through the Revolutionary War, Civil War, that type of thing. And then on my grandma's side, they were also farmers, but they're from Sweden. And then my grandma had came over here and eventually got with my grandpa, and so that's where our story like really started in my regard. But yeah, I grew up farming, just absolutely loved driving tractor, being part of the farm and doing every little part of that. Ended up going to school down in LA. I was you know, pretty intent on playing football. I didn't realize, you know, you got to be a little bigger, faster, you know, when you're trying to compete at that level. So I ended up joining the Army. I was an infantry lieutenant. Absolutely loved the Army, adored it, loved being in infantry, but I ended up having a pretty serious injury, so I got medically retired. At that time, I came home to the family farm, and I had only in my whole life, like the whole vision had always been, I want to, you know, be in the military and make a career of that, and I want to come home and join the family farm and live this, you know, just kind of peaceful, idyllic life. But I came home to the farm, and you know, I had this conversation with my dad, and I'm 23 or 24 years old at the time, and he's like, hey, man, like I'm barely hanging on. We're small time. There's not really a career for you. You're gonna have to find something else to do. And I had just never considered that. I'd never considered that my life was going to be, hey, the Army is not an option. Where now the farming is not an option. Where this is, you know, so, but I took my dad and my grandpa's advice. We had always had trucks to haul our crops. And we had seasonal crews for our grape picking operation, for our wine grape operation. And we'd always had trucks. I've been driving around since I was a little kid, changing tires, doing stuff like that. And so my grandpa and dad always said, hey, as long as you got your class A, you keep it clean, no matter what happens in life, you're always going to have a job. Anywhere you go in the world, there's always going to be a need for truck drivers, right? Especially if you're a good one, right? So I went and I drove truck for a company in Fresno called Reimer Transport. It was a heavy haul operation where we hauled bulldozers, excavators, all the oversized construction equipment you kind of see going down the freeway. It's pretty wild as a green truck driver doing that, but I got a great, I mean, if you imagine like, you know, Ben Moore driving down the road, had my license for 2 weeks, you know, going 12, 14 feet wide. I mean, this is not the, there's some scary things happening on the road, right? So not, you know, not every truck driver is fully qualified, right? And I was one of those not very qualified truck drivers at the time. But so I did that for about a year. You know, I gained the skill, enjoyed it, but I went and started my own trucking company. And I was also started trying to lease raisin vineyards from some older gentlemen that were kind of phasing out, you know, similar situation to us as a farm where they don't, there's not really a successor in line. The business is kind of, you know, the value is really in the land, but it's not so much in the production at that point. So I was leasing raisin vineyards from some older gentlemen, and I was also driving truck with the intent of trying to work my way back into farming as like my everyday sort of thing. And that's when I started hauling fruit for other farmers, and we'd haul fruit from the fields to the packing houses. And then the evenings we'd haul the fruit that they weren't selling, right? So it was somewhere between 2 to 6 loads a day of fruit that had about 50% of it just has cosmetic issues, right? So hail damage, wind scars, you know, too big, too small, you name it, you know, it's got sugar spots, things like that. The other 50% of the fruit being dumped out really had some sort of shelf stability issue where it was maybe a little bit overripe, has split pit, or like the fruit, it gets soft shoulder where the top of the fruit ripens, but the bottom doesn't ripen at the same speed. So, you know, it can be sold to the grocery stores for one reason or another. So just me as a big hungry truck driver, I'm just hauling and dumping this fruit, you know, every day. And I would eat fruit. As truckers, you know, we have a joke, like we eat what we're hauling unless it's shit, you know? And so I'm just eating this fruit and I'm thinking like, man, like I'm eating 10 or 12 of these peaches a day. And it's never really occurred to me, why is nobody doing something with this fruit? There's got to be a better use for it than just dump it out in fields. I mean, we dump it in compost yards. We dump it at dairies. We dig holes in fields, dump it there. We dump it on the avenues. I mean, it was just, I mean, fruit on fruit on fruit being dumped everywhere. And so that's why I took a look at this. I was like, you know, I think I want to start a business. I think there's an opportunity here. Call it the Ugly Company. And that's actually when I went to Notre Dame, because I realized, hey, I don't really have the business skills to do this. That's what led me to Notre Dame specifically, was trying to learn how to be a better business person.
I think you won, Ben. You have your product on the store shelves of Target, Sam's Club, lots of others. You set a big goal here, and I think you are maybe underplaying your capability and strength here, maybe just slightly. You said, hey, look, I want to decrease food waste. I think you have a 12 million pound goal, if I remember right, and you're about halfway there. What was the driver? Was it just this idea of hauling this fruit that, like, man, this could be better? What led you to set a goal for waste reduction?
Yeah, so we did have a 12 million pound goal. We already actually surpassed that. We just smashed through that this last year.
Come on. Congratulations.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So we've now reset the goal because we've already prevented over 12.7 million pounds of fruit from becoming waste. Now the goal is in the next 10 years to get to 100 million pounds by 2035, which I might need to reset the goal already because we're kind of re-accelerating through that goal. But yeah, we're on shelves in Walmart, Sam's Club, Whole Foods, working towards Costco, also working towards Target. Got, you know, Sprouts is another amazing vendor. I mean, we have tons of partners, too many to list at this point, I guess. But for me, it was just one of those things like, you know, when you're younger as a kid and you work in ag, we're used to fruit being dumped out. It's kind of part of the process. When I was a kid, we would dump a lot of the waste at local dairies. There was a ton of small dairies back in the day, just as there was a ton of small farms back in the day. Well, ag is not immune to the law of business, right? Where the industry is consolidating. There's all the smaller fragmented players are kind of being worked out for one way or for one reason or another. And so the same with dairies, they're consolidating as well. And so there just wasn't many options in our areas to dump the fruit. And so we started just dumping it left and right in fields. And so that's when I was like, man, you know, I've been in the Army. I've traveled over, you know, a decent amount of the world at this point. I'm like, this is kind of a unique problem to hear in Central California, where at this scale, I mean, because for us ag in Central California, as in the Midwest, like, you know, we're big time producers, and it's not like 1-2 acre growers of anything. It's, you know, we're all, these are big operations going on at this point. And so I kind of just looked at this of just as like, if you're a driven truck, you've sat there for 10, 12, 14 hours a day, like, and you think about the same thing over and over and over. So you have a ton of time to just think, you know? And so I would just think, I was like, man, like, there's got to be something better to do with this fruit than just dump it out. Cause it's really good fruit at the end of the day. Right. So that was just kind of with me, it just spurred the moment. Like, man, I'm just tired of dumping fruit. This is dumb. You know, there's gotta be something better here.
From that idea, Ben, you're sitting in the cab of the truck, you have this idea, you create the brand, the Ugly Company. For those that don't know, walk them through. You have fruit that is maybe blemished or whatever. What do you do with it, and how would they see it? How would a consumer see it on the store shelf?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I probably glazed over that a little bit, right? But so at the Ugly Company, we save fruit from local farms. We make dried fruit out of it. There's no added sugars. There's no added ingredients. It's literally just the fruit itself. I don't have any bags actually here with me because I'm in my home office, not my office at work. But we have a nice label. It's called Hell I'm Ugly. You know, it's got the nice bright colors. You'll see it in shelves all over the U.S. And it's all centered around, first and foremost, providing a good, healthy product to our customers. You know, me as like kind of a country boy, Central California. My grandma, she would take the fruit that we weren't harvesting from the field and she would dry it on the roof of the house. So I grew up eating dried peaches, dried white nectarines, all these types of things that I didn't realize most people had never had, right? You know, dried fruit, that was not like necessarily in the palate of everybody. So that's one thing we're doing as a business. We're providing, you know, different varieties of dried fruit to people. So it's kind of unlocking new consumers or more consumption of a good, healthy product like that. It's all centered around providing a great, healthy product to our customers with the added benefit of it being sustainably sourced. It all comes to our local farms. All of it would have been tossed out. And we're helping our farms be more efficient, adding money to the bottom line, but we're also helping our consumers live more sustainably and helping our retailers meet their sustainability goals as well.
It's a bold story. We're going to dig into what does the future of the Ugly Company look like and maybe dig into Ben's background just a little bit more. We'll do it right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
From berries to dairies, from crop advisors to data analyzers, Indiana Farm Bureau is at the forefront of the top issues impacting Indiana agriculture. No matter your role in the ag industry, Indiana Farm Bureau membership means you'll always have a champion and an advisor. And because so much of your time is focused on your own enterprise, it's also good to know Indiana Farm Bureau is always working to fight for the future of agriculture. We come together to advocate for rural viability, the protection of property rights, competitive tax policies, and against burdensome regulations. Whether our members need a door opened, an impact in public policy, or an ally to strengthen their communities, Indiana Farm Bureau is there. We are the unified voice for all agriculture. To learn more about the benefits of Indiana Farm Bureau membership, go to infb.org.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience, talking with Ben Moore, the founder of The Ugly Company. Ben, your story of turning fruit that's discarded into a really cool, nutritious product, just incredible. I want to understand a little bit more. How does this work? Are you going to producers and saying, hey, that stuff that you would throw away, let me have it? What does it look like for them from a macro economic standpoint? And then how do you bring that value all the way through to that store shelf?
That's a great question, because that's one of like the just natural sort of misperceptions about what we're doing and about food waste in general, is that like, oh, well, why would you want to dump it out? This would be so easy to go in there and just make this happen, right? Well, even though I'm from the industry, you know, I'm a truck driver, I know the logistics behind this incredibly well. It was really difficult at first to get growers to work with us, because we're essentially kind of disrupting their existing flow of their operation. And back in the day, and there's still some growers we haul for where they pay us to dump their fruit out. And it's just considered a waste product like anything else. When you have a waste product, it needs to go from point A to point B as efficiently as possible. And back then they were paying, you know, 12 to 20 bucks a ton to haul and dump it, depending on how long the haul was. And even though Ben Moore, the truck driver, would eat the fruit in that state, it's not handled hygienically at that point, right? So it was ferried out of the packing house on a series of conveyors. It dumped into my side dump trailers that were sitting there in the sun and 110 degrees. I mean, and it's sitting there all day. And so it's not handled hygienically at that point. It can't go to the grocery store, right? Even though, like I said, you know, Redneck Ben has no problem eating it. That's not, you know, the rest of people in the world, that's not okay, right? So what we do now, we pay our growers about 80 to 100 bucks a ton, depending on which commodity it is. We pay them for the fruit. What that gains us is, you know, we get buy-in from the growers as well, because there's an economic incentive for them. It helps us run our food safety program. So we have our traceability where we can trace our fruit all the way from our package, all the way back to the field it came from. There's a little bit of cost for the grower to be able to do that. So we need to pay them to consider that. It's also handled hygienically, which is the most important part. So it's handled at the same exact standard as would go to the grocery store. There's no touch points or anything like that. And that's definitely something I want to point out as well, that, hey, this is ugly fruit. We're saving fruit, but it's really good fruit. There's nothing wrong with it for processing. And I've been in processing plants before that are handling purpose grown fruit. And like, our fruit is better than that. I can promise you, because it's meant to go to Whole Foods, right? It's meant to be premium fruit. They store it on site for us until we come pick it up. Sometimes it's same day. Usually it's the next day. So they'll also keep it in cold storage for us. And then we bring it to our plant in Farmersville. So Farmersville, I'm sure everybody in the world's heard of that. It's just outside of Visalia, south of Fresno in Central California, a beautiful little town. We process that at our facility. We're vertically integrated. We built this facility a few years ago. State of the art. There's nothing quite like it in the world, because my plant engineer and I, we designed them uniquely to handle this fruit that's being thrown out rather than being grown purposely to become the end product. So from when it goes from the field to the packing house, 24 hours to when it's packed. From the packing house to being sorted out to us is another 24 hours. We process it in another 24 hours. So from when it was on the tree to when it's a piece of dried fruit is about 72 hours usually. that's important as well, because a lot of the fruit is very ripe. So it needs to be processed quickly because it's overripe and has some of those shelf stability issues I was talking about earlier. But for the purpose of drying, it's fantastic. And then from there, we store it and we just wait until, you know, we're getting ready to fulfill our orders, and we bring it back out of long-term storage and get it prepared and sent off to our customers.
It's an awesome model. I love the idea of taking something that was once waste and actually creating value at the point of production. Powerful story. Ben, your story is powerful as well. You are an example. You are exemplary, I guess, is the only way I can describe it, of what perseverance is. You get hurt in the Army, could have been a massive setback. You come back to the farm, there's not room for you. Could have been a massive setback. Somehow, some way, you found hope in areas where it wasn't always hopeful. What can you share with, whether it's entrepreneurs, whether it's a mom, a dad, whomever that's listening to this and needs to find hope? What can they learn from Ben Moore?
We all know, right? With every setback that happens, like, it always sucks, but there's always something to it. You know, I joined the Army because I wanted purpose, right? I wanted the purpose of, I wanted to lead, and I thought, hey, serve your country, this is going to be amazing. Well, yeah, even though I had that pretty horrible setback, you know, we're basically running an infantry battalion here in Central California. I mean, it's ran the same way, the same values, the same way. We start work at 7 a.m., right? Like, that kind of thing. So there was a great opportunity in that. And I think what I'm doing now is honestly probably more meaningful than whatever I would have accomplished in the Army. So that's pretty cool. But as far as, like, you know, the hope thing, I mean, you know, I'm not the most, like, inspirational type of guy. So I think people got to find inside you, like, what makes you wake up every day and get going? And, like, that's not something anybody else can really find for you. But what I always tell people, and I just told all these FFA students at the state conference, I gave that speech at a couple weeks ago. I'm a trucker by trade, right? So I frame this with business, with life, and whatever you're trying to do. Even if it's just like, I was building a chicken coop the other day and it was kicking my ass, I'm like, I got to power through this, right? So as a trucker, we always say there's no replacement for displacement. Basically, what that means is, like, there's no replacement for having the biggest motor, right? So you can have all the fancy turbos, all this other stuff, but having just a huge ass motor is what's going to pull the hill the hardest. And so I look at that the same way with business, the same way with life challenges that I faced myself, that there's no replacement for hard work, no replacement for just getting after as best you can. And that's what's going to pull you through those low points. That's what's going to pull you through the challenges and the hard stuff, because you can lean on other people, and you got to keep your motor maintained. You got to, you know, go to church if that's for you. You got to change the oil, do things like that. But there's just no replacement for working hard. And even though there's no replacement for working hard, and, you know, you can't guarantee you're going to be successful if you work hard, but I can guarantee you won't be successful if you don't work hard. And I can guarantee you're not going to get through whatever you're going through if you can't work your way through it, right? Because that's just the only way in my life experience.
Ben, you are a super bright guy. You have a Notre Dame MBA, graduated from the Benning School for Boys, also known as the U.S. Army Infantry School. You've done amazing things. And you are now, to your point, serving in a different way. How do you look at what you're doing in the Ugly Company, with the Ugly Company, is really a platform to serve, whether it's producers, whether it's consumers? How are you thinking about service as part of this?
It's really interesting, right? We haven't thought of it that exact way before, so I might fumble my way through this one. But my vision of service has changed over the years, right? So as a 22-year-old infantry lieutenant, service is just being there, being badass, being in shape, and just being hardcore, right? And just leading from the front and doing everything you can to be, you know, the hardest, toughest guy, right? And then I ended up doing my trucking thing, and I kind of lost that, like, feeling of service that I had enjoyed. And so when I started my business, I had this, hey, I want to kind of change some of these things about ag. I want to bring people in and pay people, you know, really well. And I want to build this thing up, and really got humbled in a lot of ways, because, you know, at the end of the day with ag, I mean, ag's binary, right? You got to produce a good price, a good quality, and you got to be competitive. And it's tough. I tell you, like, it is tough to start an ag business in Central California. This is as mature of a market as you could get into. The barriers to entry are incredibly high. You got to have land. You got to have, I mean, it's insane barrier to entry, right? So what I've learned with service is, like, you can't serve everybody, right? You can't be so idealistic that you're out trying to solve all the world's problems and kind of force this dream you have upon people. But what I've learned, if you find the right people that are vision aligned, that really understand who you are and what you're trying to do, and they see the opportunity in front of you, those are the best people to serve. Because those people can see the opportunity, and they will, at this point, they're carrying our business, really, right? Like, it's not so much Ben Moore. I'm doing things like this, and I'm got the vision, but I mean, it's really our frontline leaders. Those are who are leading the business at this point. And that's, I think, the best service for me, is just the opportunity. Like, hey, I've created such an environment here that I always wanted to create, big picture, but it really was about this opportunity does not exist for anybody else in our generation because we're the only ag processing business that's been started from scratch in Central California in my entire generation. That's pretty powerful for people that didn't have the opportunity to go from, you know, from zero all the way to the top, which we've had some of these people that are coming through with us now that, you know, started as a line worker that became quality control assistant, became quality control manager, now working in sales. That's a huge leap that somebody can make in a few years. And that opportunity just hasn't existed for others in our generation. That's how I look at service now, right? Is just being the best I can be, being humble, showing up, and just knowing that this opportunity is now here for others to run with.
Lots of runway still to come, Ben. There's time for one more question. And it's one of my favorites because it sets this whole thing in motion. What's next? What do you look for in the future of the Ugly Company? What can we expect to see on store shelves here in the next 12 to 24 months?
What next? Oh, if only I had a crystal ball, right?
Right.
So I'll say the plan of what's next, right? First and foremost, I'm going into a capital raising season here. We've grown tremendously over the last 6 years. We have a big inventory build season. So as we're making these big leaps of growth and going to these big retailers, I need more capital to build inventory, basically, right? So now hitting the road, raising capital. So if anybody's listening to this and, you know, you want to get in touch, that'd be awesome, right? If you know anybody that might be interested in taking a look, you know, please let me know. So that's a big deal for us. Got to accomplish that. And then number two, we have a Walmart launch coming up in June. So we're going to be in about 180 select Walmarts doing a pilot program with our new family sized units. So we've always had a flagship snack size unit that you could buy, you know, kind of in all these different locations in the natural channel. But now we're running a 10 ounce in Walmart, which is really cool. It's great value for the customer. I'm really excited about it. And I've seen our brand like been able to like, it really works well, not just in the natural channel, some of these like Whole Foods and some of these Sprouts, these other amazing stores. But we did a test in Sam's Club. It went phenomenal. So the Walmart one's big for us. We're also doing an expansion in some of the Kroger banners as well to also test the family size, which is really big. And something else I'm really passionate about, it wasn't where I was intending to take the business originally, but it's a fun channel for us. And I think it really is a good service-oriented channel, like you were saying, as schools. So we're selling product in schools now. We have a phenomenal distribution partner called Gold Star Foods that we're working with that's helping us accelerate as a small company into these different locations. And I think that's really big because you kind of zoom out like, hey, why are we going this way with schools and Walmart and things like that? The world is really changing right now in an interesting way where you have like this confluence of events where, hey, people were really interested in sustainability 10 years ago. A lot of people have, but like really accelerating kind of 10 years ago. We rode that wave, it was great. But then healthy eating is really at the forefront of people's minds now. I think a lot of it sort of started under President Obama and now it's being carried through, especially into schools and things now. So healthy eating is a big one. And then also with this tariff situation that's going on that nobody is quite has the feel. If anybody says they have a feel for it, they're probably wrong or they're probably a little bit overconfident. We're made in America, domestic manufacturer. A lot of our competitors are importing foreign goods. So in a vacuum, this should be a good thing for us. So I'm sitting here watching this closely, just wondering how this is going to happen and how it's going to reshape ag. In my lifetime, I've seen some of these crazy things happen with tariffs and trade wars and stuff. So yeah, that's where we're going. We got a lot of great things going on. Hiring a lot more people as well this summer for our plant, looking at running a second shift.
Oh, that's exciting. Ben Moore, founder of The Ugly Company, a great American, an incredible entrepreneurial story. Thanks so much for spending time with us on Ag Bioscience.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. I had a great time really digging it. Would love to come back if you'd ever like me.
We'll see you soon. And thank you for joining us on Ag Bioscience. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget, while you're online, check us out at agrinovisindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovis team, I'm Mitch Fraser, saying thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, hosted by Mitch Fraser, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovisindiana.com.